How's everybody doing today? Are you still hanging in there? We're almost on the home stretch here. I feel like you guys, as a right sitter, these guys have been left out. I'm going to stand over here for just a second. It's kind of interesting what we've done to ourselves, and I'd like to highlight the problem by bringing a couple friends of mine, Will and Margo, to kind of set us up here.
Take those binoculars, pick any player on or off the field, and I will guess the number.
Any player.
Been around for a long, long year. Stole many a man's soul of faith.
Number 55.
I was around when Jesus.
How did you know who he was gonna pick?
We told him to. We've been telling him all day.
From the moment he left his hotel room, we've been priming him, programming his subconscious. He's been seeing the number 55 all day long. On the elevator, in the lobby, even the stick pin on the doormat. Not only that, we loaded his route from the hotel to the stadium. He looks out the window, primers are everywhere. Now he doesn't see it, but he does. There's no getting around it. He even sees Farhad. Suggestions are everywhere, from the number of flowers in a vase. And it's not only what he sees, it's what he hears. The Mandarin word for five is Wu. There are 124 Wu-Wus in sympathy for the devil. Now, he's not registering it, but it's all there. So when he picks up those binoculars, looks out on the field, sees a familiar face with the number 55 on his jersey, some little voice in the back of his mind says, that's it. And he thinks it's intuition, and he picks.
Do you want me to write it down?
So that's what we're trying to do, right? We're trying to get somebody to pick the right answer. What I'd like to focus your attention on, though, was that was a neat story about how they created an impression in his mind. But think about all the logistics of tracking somebody, knowing where they are, their path from the hotel to the stadium. There's a couple million dollars on the line in that bet, by the way. And having a crowd of people holding 55 and a billboard go by and all these things happening in a 30-minute period. How do we orchestrate the execution of an ad campaign? So there's some interesting stuff that has to go on to create an impression. And what's really interesting about what we've done as an industry is we've made this content, this premium content, mobile. So we've got millions of viewers watching some of the best content on the planet, and now they can take it with them, and we have the ability to create an impression with them no matter where they are or where they go. And that's a really cool story, and especially I want to focus a little bit on set-top VOD for a minute, because you look at the growth rate there. So you heard talk about Xfinity. That was an idea about 5 years ago. And what's happening now, and I'll hit a few of the statistics, right, is that platform has more than almost 50% adoption within the cable Comcast subscriber system, which is about 11 million households, let's say three people per household. We're 30 or 40 million people that we can influence in real time now and track it as an impression-based delivery. No longer is it a linear purchase, right? So we've created a whole new set of inventory. And the content that we've made available, interestingly, one of the things that we all know or have found out, right, is that if we take some of the series content and stack it, so we can actually bring people into the TV experience because they can catch up. So if I missed a couple weeks, I can go catch up, and now I'm ready for the new live series. So we watch the sympathetic relationship between live and set-top VOD and TVE. Happening in real time. It's so linear TV, and so we also noticed really this big uplift in viewing also on the TVE platform, which is also another pull through. So the question is, how do we tie all these together to really make those work? But I want to suggest that we've got a problem that we've created for ourselves. So VOD impressions on the set-top box have gone up exponentially. right? So, and we're expecting it to go up even more and faster. The question on the logistics that we showed a minute ago is, can I catch those impressions? So eyeballs are moving, and we're not quite sure if the system's ready to catch all those eyeballs. So what happens is, whoops, did I turn that off? Is we lose impressions. Ah, there we go. So the question is, can we get the ads in front of these people with the impressions that we've created in real time? And unfortunately, I'd say we're outrunning ourselves a bit. So it used to be as easy as we just climbed up the top of the ladder, sat down, and let gravity take care of it, right? It just happened automatically in the background. Now we're a little more complicated, right? Because we've got to get this ad content in all the right forms in all the right places. So we're walking back into the factory and looking at how the sausage is made between figuring out who our audience is and how we actually measure the performance after we get done. And there's a lot of inefficiencies in the system. I'll give you a couple examples, right? An ad today that shows up on set-top VOD actually goes to every single programmer who repurposes that content and distributes themselves to the edge and refers to it back into their own ad decision engine. So we're dependent then on the performance of a number of different players in the space. Now we introduce the idea of public markets, where we can take some of this extra inventory that we have and try to monetize it in public market form. And what we figure out is there's nobody to traffic the creative, to get these ads in the right form, in the right place, so that they play. We've come up with some great strategies in the digital domain, in the non-set-top box world, but we still have outpaced ourselves a bit on the set-top VOD world. Our challenge then is, how do we as an industry sort of step up to that plate? And we were talking about standards this morning, and the adoption rate and the slowness of maybe moving some of these pieces into place. So I think the answer is we need to break the supply chain for ad delivery. Part of the challenge with premium content, as opposed to where we've been in digital in the past, is the thought that these brands, since this was premium content, really care about the user experience. They care about what ads we put into their content. The distribution chain now in the set-top VOD world is a government-regulated platform that has to conform with government compliance, right? So we have to have COMAC compliance. The volume levels have to be set right, and we have certain quality expectations in that. So we have a number of major brand players that now really care how we do this and how we make it work. That's why today every programmer controls the ads and their preparation and distribution in the supply chain for set-top VOD. What we really need to do, though, and then that creates an adoption problem, because we've got 20 people doing it their own way. So what we really need to do is tie all these things together. And I believe the answer at the end of the day is a centralized library with centralized sets of data federated to all the right things, the ad IDs and the talent clearing and some of those functions, all of the technical standards, and think about the requirements, if you will, around, can I put this ad with this piece of content? Do I have adjacency? I've got to know what the content is. I've got to characterize it in a way that the industry can effectively match that ad up with a piece of content that has permission and appropriateness to put in there. And then I've got to separate it with the business rules that say I can only do, one automotive ad in the break, right? So how do we tie all that together? And I think the answer is we're only looking at a couple thousand ads a month right now in VOD. We will be looking at 10,000 ads a month. Currently in our Comcast local spotlight sales, they may do as many as 500 to 1,000 ads a day. But what I would argue is that's not a lot of content. This shouldn't be that big a problem. And so what we've been working on is putting the easy button in the middle of all this and just creating a library that holds all the ad content and allowing that content to just be aware of itself, aware of it where it goes, and aware of what it's capable of doing. And you got to do that in connection with some other partners in the industry. So we've been working with our buddies at FreeWheel. So if we can tie the campaign management system to asset management systems to this general awareness, we have the makings of sort of campaign and asset management in one pane of glass. So we should be able to just get the traffic instructions, associate the ads with the content that it needs to go with, and hit go. And the system ought to be able to figure out how to get that content, those couple thousand ads a month or a day, whatever they are, in the right form, in the right places, and the campaign ought to fire. So today we experienced this notion of maybe even days to launch a campaign that we've got to be prepared in. So the auto industry took on the same challenge, right? How do we move up our supply chain? I was in Tennessee at the Volkswagen Passat plant. They require their suppliers, from the time they make a call that they need new material on the line, they have 1 hour to get it there and ready for the assembler to put it in the car. We ought to be able to do that. And the reality is we can't today. But if we're going to be really effective, like Will and Margot, she asked the great question, how did you do that? It should be easy. We should be able to get those logistics and take them out of play. So with that, I've got a couple minutes. Any questions? By the way, AdStore is a product that to capture, to service the programmers, to be able to take, ingest their ad content sort of simultaneously with their linear group, and be able to go through the catalog, pick the assets, and hit distribute for all of their set-top VOD today. So you can certainly do your digital as well. Yes?
Who would be the ideal bring together organization? I'm sorry. Who would be the ideal organizations to bring all this together and make it happen?
Well, so it's interesting. We've talked about standards this morning, and typically, you know, standards bodies are intended to kind of pull together the thinking of the industry. What we need is just somebody to go execute so that those standards have a place to live, because to get 20 or 30 people to change the way they do it versus pick a brand new model and just implement them and make them available, I think is where we're headed. So that's part of what we're trying to do, is let's go break the supply chain. We'll put quality in up front, characterization in up front, tie it to the right sets of data, and then it's just about how we use it in the supply chain.
And Bunker, where are you at in terms of launch and socializing this? Are you the kickoff stage?
No, we have a couple major programmers using it and a couple in trial. So we've got a new system coming out, and really that's just the tool set that allows the concentration of ad content into a library and the ability to select it and the destination output you need and having it go, you know, pull those in. So we're actually, it's a live product today. We're learning as we go about some of the specific requirements of the users. But the idea again is just so the campaign manager doesn't have to worry about trafficking the content, just needs to go away.
And your last question to you, Bunker. We've talked a lot about the work that you're doing, and what are the resistances to the behavioral change? We're talking about, people still say, well, I don't need a unique identifier. I don't need to be using ad ID. What are the resistances, or where are those pockets of resistance still happening, and how do we get past them?
So I think the major one for me is in the linear world, we have some perfectionists, and there's a reason for that. There's a lot of money on the line. If we ever go to black or put a slate on the screen or anything happens, we've got millions of viewers. You don't buy a 30-second ad and pay $300,000 for it in a forgot the name of the show, but it's the top-rated one. It's the kids, the scientists guys. Anyway, but you don't pay that much money and have it not work perfectly.
Right.
So now we're taking this premium content and we're putting it down into a system that they're not exactly sure, and we got fast tags where people can substitute ads behind those tags and things change on them. And so I think the resistance is, I'm going to lose control. Can I lose it in a way that I'm comfortable with?
Got it. Bunker, thank you.
Yep, my pleasure.
Bunker Sessions.
So we're in the home stretch, our closing panel. And when we heard this morning from John Palfrey, he said that, you know, the different layers of interoperability, the layered approaches, the easy ones are the technology and the data. It's people that we have to start to figure out the sort of the way to get them to manage change. So Chick Foxgrover of the 4A's is going to lead a panel on the agency's view and the people involved in the process.
Thanks very much, Harold. Yes, we're going to talk a little bit about the agency side of the interoperability equation. And we have some great panelists from media, creative, and integrated to talk a little bit about what the realities are of the agency side of the business, talk about some of the challenges that we have even in working together on our side of the business, and then also some of the solutions that are starting to bubble up and the dynamics that are forcing them. So I'll let everybody introduce themselves, and then we'll get started. So Mitch.
I'm Mitch Weinstein. I head up ad operations at IPG Media Brands.
Hi, I'm Robert Cross. I work at a WPP horizontal agency, which is dedicated to Colgate-Palmolive.
I'm Roseanne Johnson. I'm the executive director of VML New York, and we're a creative agency.
So I wanted everybody to start with just a description of the realities of their side of the business from the standpoint of client demands, production realities, and even how your success is measured by your clients.
I'll start from a creative perspective. Sometimes the creative agency pressures are a little bit at odds with some of the automation and media agency pressures. It's not about fitting into kind of standard units. It's about doing something groundbreaking. It's about doing something that's unique, that's going to gain attention. So a tremendous amount of pressure to break the mold that actually creates efficiency. Our KPIs and our pressures are about how do you break that in order to create and gain awareness and to create excitement from your audience.
Yeah, I think from a media point of view, I think from my side, there's two key areas. One is just what media is here to do. So the first thing are the basics of optimized delivery, right? Our goal is to mitigate our awareness decline with audiences, right? And we have to continue building that in a cost-efficient way. It's become far more complex in terms of the brand safety issue. And are we actually sure that the dollars we're spending are being seen by human beings? So that's a big challenge for us. But the third part of it is sitting with an integrated agency, which Redfuse has all disciplines under one roof, which is quite a rare model in the industry. The biggest challenge for us is working with our partners in creative, in tech, in brand planning, in account, et cetera, and coming up with an integrated product that drives Colgate's goals. So we have quite a broad set of standards that we're held to.
For us, the key things are going to be reaching audiences at scale efficiently. So we do that, you know, through various mechanisms, programmatic, direct buys, anything that we can do with social media. But it's all about reaching our audiences, and it's also about, you know, driving what the goals and objectives are of a particular campaign. If it's getting people into certain locations, if it's getting people to buy things online, to take a survey, download something, whatever it is, it's really all about making sure we're reaching the right audience with the right message at the right time in order to drive that performance and then be able to measure that performance and constantly optimize and reiterate our campaigns so that we can go back and, you know, increase whatever the goals are. So it's a constant cycle to keep, you know, optimizing, staying on top of the latest trends, and driving client goals.
Do you find that there are challenges then working with the creative side of the business to making sure that you get your job done?
Sometimes.
Yes.
You know, one of the things that we've been working on and we're starting to roll out a lot more widely across our clients is the, you know, dynamic creative optimization, DCO, making sure that we're not just you know, loading a message, and hopefully it works against every audience. You know, each audience is different, will respond differently. It also depends on what platform that they're seeing this message in. So it's really important to make sure that we have messages that are constantly optimized and that are engaging the audiences as they should, and that we're getting that data back and analyzing it closely. And that's part of the problem, right? There's just so much data to look at when we you know, get all this feedback. But really it's about, you know, the right message, a right custom message to the right audiences. And, you know, working with creative agencies that can, you know, there's a lot of process involved there in terms of developing the creative, production of it, which messages get served to which audiences. So often we have to work very closely with creative agencies on those types of things.
And as far as closing the loop on data, very often creative is on to their next big adventure while we're still collecting data from a previous campaign. So as much as big data is so important for all of us and makes us smarter and makes our work smarter, there's also some opportunities, let's call them opportunities, for us to get better at making sure that the right information comes back into the minds of creative folks as they're continuing to develop new campaigns. So when we talked about it as a panel, the pace of all that is so fast, and there's so much to ingest that there's definitely optimizations that can happen in that feedback loop.
And there's so many different parties involved. You have the creative agency, the media agency, the client, the technology platform, the ad server. If there's a DMP collecting this data, there's just lots of different moving parts, and we really need to do a better job of figuring out how we collaborate and work, you know, across those different areas.
Yeah, and I think that's something that we've been trying to deal with in the last year to 18 months at Redfuse, working with Colgate. Is, you know, we're running advertising in 65 different countries around the world. It's an enormous network of people and capabilities to navigate, and we've gone back to the basics in terms of how do we develop campaigns, because we've seen, you know, disconnects occurring as have been talked about by this panel in terms of just media and creative. But we've gone right back to, are we even aligned on what the brief is about, right? Are we challenging and interrogating the brief? Are the key stakeholders on the client side signed off on what the problem is with that particular brand or what it is trying to achieve? Because if you don't start there, you're never going to get to the right kind of assets to deliver against that. So we've built out a whole program that brings together the different capabilities and allows the different capabilities to understand the roles and responsibilities, and then have a core team of intra-agency capabilities and designated clients making sure they manage that and follow that. And it's something we're piloting at the moment to streamline this and enable us to cut some of our campaign development times by up to 80% to get this out into market across a vast number of countries. So it's been a real learning curve in terms of just the fundamentals of how we build campaigns in today's world now.
And as you can imagine, creative people love to be rushed. So that creates some tension there in terms of there's just an inherent, like, well, this is a process and it's creative and I can't rush the thinking. And then there's the media agencies who have to feed kind of that automated process. So there are definitely opportunities for us, I think, to think about, going back to the data point, how do we get that right cycle of information coming back so we can help inform the creative process, so we can actually cut some of that. In a world where everything has to happen, it has to be opportunistic, you have to take advantage of what's going on in society to make your creative relevant, that process is definitely sometimes overwhelming.
I mean, that's a really important point. You know, there's different creatives work in different environments, right? You know, a 30-second spot on TV doesn't always work as well in a digital environment. And, you know, I think sometimes that doesn't get through, that message, you know, in terms of what our clients are trying to do. You know, with Facebook and YouTube just announced they're killing the 30-second pre-roll. You know, Facebook is, you know, constantly informing us that our creative needs to be a little different to work in a Facebook-type environment. So there's all these different formats and platforms that, you know, we need to get a better handle on and figure out, you know, which types of formats work better in which environments. Because a single campaign could be running in social, and it could be running in programmatic, and it could be running, you know, on a FEP, on a Hulu site or someone like that. And each one might require a different type of format. And that's not always easy, right, from the creative development end, but it's something, it's you know, a necessary thing to reach audiences the right way.
I think even from a, if you think about it, not from an agency perspective, but from a client perspective, they have to manage so many more work streams and so many more outputs and reviews and bringing that through legal. And that's part of the process too, where the agencies can only work so fast, but if you used to produce two or three pieces of creative and now you have to produce 30 pieces of creative, think about all the folks that are touching that creative, not just from an agency, but from an internal client perspective. And now, you know, of course you want to run your 30-second TV spot on digital because it's more efficient to do that, but we know, the data tells us, that that doesn't work. So that means going back at that piece of creative and creating multiple variations of that, which is why automation helps, but it doesn't remove all of the work, all of the creativity, all of the messaging work that needs to happen.
And I think that's how Howard talked about it. You talked about consumer centricity and how we develop campaigns, and a lot of people say it, but it's not always done. So you're talking about automating creative and taking a 30-second spot and putting it on Facebook video and hoping it delivers the same as it may on TV. And that's not the case. And I think one of the big factors that we miss in terms of connecting creative and media is that there are insights. It's not just about the channels anymore. And you talked about right time and right place, but it's also about the individual's need state when you're talking about them, when you're connecting with them. What do they want? Like, what is going to create value in that moment? What is their mood? What are they looking for, right? Now, if they're on their phones and they're out and walking the street, that's a very different user occasion to if they're sitting there on a Sunday night watching some primetime TV. And then one of the biggest challenges we have in terms of media working with the creative discipline is, what are the assets that help build out what is a very fragmented consumer journey now and create value for the consumers then? Because if we're not creating value, we're not going to drive our goals.
And that's one thing I wanted to sort of talk about. Is here at this conference, we've been talking a lot about the mechanics and the interoperability of a certain ecosystem, whereas what the agency is dealing with now is delivering to many, many more contexts than television, even multi-platform television. So what's happening on the creative side and the pressures and things like that are really producing some things that are really very difficult to handle. One of the things I wanted to get to was the, from everybody's point of view, is what we're seeing on the agency side is every agency is building a studio now because the demand for media and advertising in social media is going completely non-industrial and non-professional. They take all the professionals out of that chain altogether. They put the millennials in a room with their iPhones, and they're out shooting video on the street with non-professional actors and non-professional editors, and they're getting it up in as fast as they can. And this has become such a big production reality that almost everybody has to get engaged in it now. So just a little bit of conversation about that from all of your point of views in terms of like how much of a reality that is, and then how do we bring some of these, you know, these efficiency mechanics back into that chain if possible?
It's an important development in our business, certainly, as the pressure for multiple pieces of content very quickly just continue. We certainly have our own content studio. We have, as you described, those folks with their iPhones and kind of getting content out there. It really, from an agency perspective, becomes a, how do you sort through the things